This telling of the Bible lessons today, the telling of the stories in these lessons, is interesting because we hear similar things recounted all through. It begins with a reading from Nehemiah, 9th chapter, verse 16. Ezra is praising God, and he's recounting this story about the Israelites. Remember, who were slaves in Egypt, and who were freed by God from that slavery through a series of astonishing miracles done before the Pharaoh, and then the parting of the Red Sea, and then he's brought these Israelites out now into the wilderness where they are and is leading them, and has taken them from slavery. And so Ezra is praising God even as he looks at the unfaithfulness of the Israelites, and he says, "But they and our fathers acted proudly, hardened their necks, and did not heed your commandments. They refused to obey, and were not mindful of your wonders that you did among them. But they hardened their necks, and in their rebellion they appointed a leader to return to their bondage. But you are God, ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abundant in kindness, and did not forsake them. Even when they made a molded calf for themselves and said, 'This is your God that brought you up out of Egypt.'" Remember, they made that Baal, that golden calf. "And worked great provocations, yet in your manifold mercies you did not forsake them in the wilderness. The pillar of the cloud did not depart from them by day to lead them on the road, nor the pillar of fire by night to show them the light and the way that they should go. You also gave your good spirit to instruct them, and did not withhold your manna from their mouth, and gave them their water for their thirst." Gave them water for their thirst. We hear this again in Psalm 78, which we said responsively together. And when we reflect on this, what the story being told here is about a patient and loving God who lavishes his gifts on us. And then we have Jesus, the Son of God. And look again how he demonstrates this extraordinary love. In the gospel passage we heard today, he feeds 5,000 men plus women and children. 5,000 men plus women and children. If you turn to your Bibles, please, to chapter 14 of Matthew, I wonder if you realize what has just happened here. Matthew chapter 14. This is where our reading begins today, at verse 13. Matthew 14, verse 13, it says, "Jesus withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself." Do you wonder why Jesus went in a boat to a deserted place by himself? Look at verse 12 of chapter 14. This is just before what you heard read. Verse 12 says, "His disciples came and took the body and buried it. And then they went and told Jesus." Whose body? This is his cousin John. John the Baptist. He has just been murdered. His head was cut off by Herod after the dance of Salome. And it says in verse 13, "Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself." Now, who was this John the Baptist? This was Jesus' cousin. Remember the story when Mary had just become pregnant with Jesus? She went to see her cousin Elizabeth. Her cousin Elizabeth was 6 months pregnant with John. And when Mary walked into the room, John leapt in Elizabeth's womb. And Elizabeth said to Mary, "Blessed art thou among women," because she was carrying in her womb the Messiah. And John leapt in her womb in response to his Messiah coming into the room still in Mary's womb. And John is still in Elizabeth's womb. And yet Elizabeth acknowledges what this means. John knew the Messiah before either of them had been born. And so surely these two boys knew each other. They were the same age, but by 6 months, and they were cousins. And John the Baptist is the one who pointed to Jesus and said, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." And he's the one who baptized Jesus and announced that he was the Messiah, the one who was to come. And so now this man has been killed by Herod for accusing Herod of marrying his own brother's wife, which he had done. And his brother's wife, now Herod's wife, angry at John the Baptist for having made public this sin of theirs, asks for the head of John the Baptist after Salome dances, and Herod has his head cut off. And then the disciples get the body and bury it, and John's disciples bury the body and then go and tell Jesus what has happened. And so Jesus goes off by himself to mourn. You know, we think sometimes, maybe you don't, but I know that I have sometimes, that Jesus is a man without emotion. I mean, this is the God incarnate. How could he be troubled by simple cares of this world? And yet this is the man who wept at the tomb of Lazarus before he called him back from the dead. He is the man who anguished in Gethsemane the night before he was to be killed. This is not a man of no emotion. This is a man of great passion. He really cared about people. And you can be sure he really cared about his cousin John, who has just been murdered by Herod. And so goes off to be by himself. But the people know that Jesus has gone off to be by himself. And they may well know about the murder of John. These sorts of things traveled quickly then as they do today. But they went after Jesus anyway, and they followed him on foot from the towns. And then they seek Jesus out, even though he's out there mourning, they seek him out for healing. Now, does Jesus say, come to me another time, come to me tomorrow or next week, give me time to sit here and mourn for my cousin? No, it says that he had compassion on them and he healed them. So even in the midst of his own grief, he responds with compassion to all of those who are in need. And it says he had compassion on them and cured their sick. And then it says, when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, this is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves. Now note that it doesn't say that they couldn't afford to buy food for themselves. It just implies that they had no food. Apparently, they may well be able to buy food for themselves if they leave Jesus and go into the villages. But Jesus says, they need not go away. You give them something to eat. They replied, we have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, bring them here to me. Then he ordered the crowds to sit down in the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves. This, by the way, is called the Berakah, and it is the blessing that a father in a Jewish family gives before the Sabbath meal. He takes a loaf of bread, breaks it, blesses God, and then breaks that loaf of bread up and distributes it among the members of the family. And they eat this before they eat any other food at that Sabbath meal. They share that loaf of bread after the blessing by the father of the house. And so Jesus does this, and then he gives the bread to the disciples and the fish, and the disciples gave them to the crowds, and all ate and were filled. And they took what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full, and those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. Now there are people who, in reading this story, theologians and even some preachers I've heard, who don't believe in miracles. They don't believe that Jesus performed any real miracles. They think those that he healed were healed of psychosomatic diseases. Or if anything, his presence and his faith gave them courage so that their mind overcame matter. And they say, we can do that. You know, we have a power within ourselves and our mind can overcome our bodies. And so if you have enough faith, then you can be healed. And so they discount those miracles of healing. Never mind that one of those was a man born blind, and no one from the beginning of time had ever healed one born blind. They simply dismiss the miracles, and they dismiss this one. And they say what probably happened is this. Some of those 5,000 or maybe 10,000 present, because there were women and children, had loaves of bread sort of hidden away in bags and maybe a little fish that they weren't going to share with anybody. They just sort of had it with them. And some of the people there didn't have anything. And they looked at the model that Jesus had shown by taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish that he and his disciples had and immediately breaking it and distributing it. And as those baskets of bread came around, Mark turned to Margaret and said, "Margaret, we got some loaves of bread in the bag. Pull them out. We'll put them in the basket and we'll let these go around too." Sort of the word sort of spread among the crowd and people pulled out food that they had and shared it. Now this may well have happened also. And in fact, I can imagine some Marks and some Margarets, Mark turning and say, "Margaret, you know, we got 5 loaves of bread with us. Why don't you pull one of them out and we'll share it here with the bread that's being shared with us." And so those who didn't have anything got to eat some from those who had something. And those who read the story this way say, this was really a miracle too. Because what happened is Jesus showed the crowd how to feed itself. And this was really the lesson that he was teaching. Now, this is a good lesson, by the way. And this may well have also occurred. Now, as I read this story, I like to think how this might apply to us today in a very real and practical sense. Because this congregation, 2.5 years ago, was 11 people strong. 11 people. We are now about 150. Not everybody is here every Sunday, and especially during the summer. But there are about 150 people who call Resurrection their church these days. And so there was great multiplication that went on here in the course of this time. Some of it was because we were blessed and a miracle took place here. I remember during the first year, many people came here who were needy. Genuinely needy, like those who went to Jesus for healing. And Dolores and I spent many a day on our knees here at this rail and in our homes praying that God would send among us leaders. Because there were so many here who were needy that there were not enough hours in the day and not enough days in the week for the two of us if we ministered 24 hours a day to meet that need. It just wasn't. And we said, "Lord, send ministers and leaders into this congregation that all of those who are in need might be blessed and healed and fed." And he honored that prayer. And he honored that prayer both by raising up ministers from within the congregation, people who I think never could have imagined that they could minister, and also by miraculously bringing people into the congregation that we had not sought out, but who felt called here and to be here and to minister. And if you look at our phone book for Resurrection, the book with everybody in the congregation in it, you'll see that at the top it says, "Head, Jesus Christ, Ministers, the People of Resurrection." And then it says, "Clergy," and lists those of us who are on staff here as clergy. Because the reality is that what the Lord has done here is a multiplication of the loaves and fishes. And he's done that both in miraculous ways of bringing new ministry into this church, and also by having ministry shared in this church by its members. And so we each need to examine ourselves, I think, me included, as we gather together and ask as the bread and fishes are distributed among us, or as the bread and wine is distributed at communion this morning, and to which you are all welcome. Whether as that bread goes by, does Mark turn to Marge and say, "We got 5 loaves, but just pull out one." Or does the Lord ask each of us who have abundance to share fully in that abundance so that those who are in need might also eat and be fed? And this is meant in the simplest financial terms, because money is the way in which we exchange our time and our energy these days. But it's also meant in terms of our ministry, of our time spent here caring for each other, not just in this church building, but in each other's homes and on the telephone with each other to see how we're doing. And when somebody is in need, to pray for them and to love them and to be with them. And each of us, if we are honest, has abundance. There are ways in which we are in need and need to be blessed miraculously and need to be blessed by the sharing out of abundance from those around us. And there are also ways in which each of us has abundance. Some of us financial abundance, others of us an abundance of time or an abundance of care or counsel or love and affection or food or just companionship. And so may our prayer be that the multiplication of the loaves and fishes be a truth that we each live out so that the Lord might multiply His work and His healing and His love here among us, that they too might be blessed when they arrive.
Tomorrow's Steve Living Continues all next week on Lifetime.
The skeleton state that George used to record my sermon last Sunday had something else on it. It was an old tape and something recorded off the radio or something like that. So the end of my sermon ends with another guy preaching about something completely different.
Weird.
Oh, that's the master.
Thank you.